What we're gonna do? Then you say, I don't know, what do you wanna do?
I have an idea.
You're gonna dig this.
The Fly Fidelity Podcast
is the solution.
It's the best.
Check it out.
You wanna get super fly.
Details just ahead.
Do you love credible content,
but hate
how long you have to wait?
And who wants
super thick and frothy dumpster juice with rat corpses in it?
There's a better way.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly Fidelity.
Fly.
Fly. Fly Fidelity.
Fidelity.
Fly Fidelity Podcast.
Fly Fidelity, baby. Fidelity, baby. Fidelity.
With your host, Luke Bailey.
Welcome to the program. On this episode, we welcome back Kinvision Ultra to discuss his latest album, Shook World, one of the purest and most intimately executed examples of his philosophy of crafting a project. Enjoy the conversation. Wanted to start from the top of Shook World, and this opening moment which takes us into the context of a pandemic battered New York. I was curious as to what your intentions were with choosing to start the album with such an intimate field recording, and if you could speak about that moment specifically.
Word. Yeah, that was April 2020. Felt like very early quarantine, the height of just kind of figuring out what this whole COVID state was looking like. And yeah, yo, it was ill too, because that was a sort of pivotal moment in my life, as I'm watching some shit happening outside my window or whatever. Basically what you're hearing is the sound of it was a Saturday morning, and my partner and I were just, you know, obviously we're in the crib quarantining and whatnot. And I'm in the bathroom, and I'm like, I hear some like glass, like mad glass shattering. I'm like, what is this? Go to the window. I'd see like wild smoke, and I'm like, oh, this is different. And you know, my partner and I are talking to each other from across from different rooms. It's just like, yo, what, like, you see that? Da-da-da. You know, and, oh, yo, it's coming from over here. Like, you hear my partner in the recording or whatever, and right. She's like directing me to the other room, and I'm like, all right, boom. I go from the bathroom to the other room, and I get a clear view. It's the building across the courtyard from us, like on like the building. You know how, like, so in New York, like in certain parts of New York, buildings aren't back to back to each other, or buildings don't take up a whole block, so to speak. Like there can be like a little like courtyard or like whatever, yeah. Just alleyway between buildings, you know, depending on like where you're at, what the sort of the makeup of that block looks like. We had like a little courtyard across from us was a building that was on fire, and it's just like, oh shit. And we were just kind of like, you know, I don't know, I was just like, bro, like, it was at that point, you know, the fire department was breaking the windows and kind of just making sure they were doing whatever they needed to be doing, I guess. So it was just kind of hectic, and I had my phone out recording it, because I'm just like, okay, just at that, I don't know why, but it just, at that moment, it was just kind of this thing of like, oh snap, like this sort of new state of living, and I'm seeing, kind of witnessing this situation where, you know, that new state of living is certainly being shifted for some few people. Hopefully it was only, I mean, hopefully it was nobody, but it definitely was at least one person's apartment, you know, where that, I don't know, it was just at that moment, I just started recording, right? Coming back to it in the process of making Shook World, it not only seemed like I wanted to use a lot of like field recording, so to speak, And a lot of them were coming from my phone because I was just kind of, I just kind of had that habit already way prior to 2020. So just catching like environmental sounds or whatnot, you know, like you hear the, certain recordings of people in the subway or moments in the subway and whatnot through the album. And those were done also via friends too. That's just kind of like some of us just do that, I guess. Some of us sound people or just people with, in New York who got phones. Like that's a capability that we have now with this technology, right? So we just, you know, kind of
documenting
little moments. So in making Shook World, it was, there's obviously an idea of displacement and, you know, whether through gentrification or otherwise. And this was just a sort of a peek into like how one version of how real life can get when you're in this state of being so close to one another. Like New York, right. We're stacked on top of each other. We're also like parked right next to each other. You know, we live like in like there's a lot of people on one block living, right? And you know, something like a fire is obviously super is a terrible thing to experience. I hope no one, you know, you wish that on nobody type shit, because it's massive destruction, right, to someone's life, like lively, like lifestyle, life situation or whatever. Basically. Right. It was like a displacement thing. It was, you know, it just kind of made sense. Plus it was just that snapshot of like another version of New York life, you know, cause like this shit could just happen at any moment. And this is like, it just seemed like the worst kind of, not like, I'm not documenting it because of the tragedy, but it's just a snapshot of like, well, damn, like this is how real it can get, you know. It's a Saturday morning, you know what I'm saying? It's the so-called weekend. So it plays on that idea of like the supposed idea of, oh, you know, the weekend's for relaxing, you know, it's peace, it's good. Like we're not, you know, for some folks, it isn't that, you know what I mean?
Here's the world.
Inferno of 1992. 20th anniversary. Troy booms due to fitness. Of recent rain drips could be an automatic skylight blocked by pre-war beams charred. Save me a shower, heavy rain and climate change, and Rolaids. Won't he will? The American cockroach on its back is said to be introduced to the Americas thanks to the Atlantic slave trade. Who knew? Who knew? Who knew?
There's also the disrupting that we do on the pushback, you know, on the counter to this, I guess, you know, living under the state, living under capitalism, living under, you know, the threat of X, Y, Z, you know what I'm saying? It sort of spoke to me when I was going through my phone recordings. I was like, oh, okay, like this is something. And I didn't want to like bring attention to that. Since you asked, you know, I mean, I'm letting it be known, but like, I didn't want to bring attention to that by like, oh, house fire on da da da. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to, it's not about the fact that it's necessarily like there's a house fire, but it's just the element of like, you know, what do you make of this when you hear something like this? What do you make of this when you see this? It's also talking about like, it also alludes to the point like, yo, some people come here and they come to New York City or come to any city and they populate it in a way where they don't engage with you know, anyone else on the block in which they now live, you know what I'm saying? They don't engage with the community. Like we, after the fact, we like checked in because we knew someone who lived in that building, and you know what I'm saying, like we're just checking in and seeing like, yo, like we could like get some stuff together and see if there's like a donation box in the lobby of that building or, you know, somewhere, maybe in the lobby of our building because they're connected. So it was just that thing of like, all right, well, now we got, you know, now we see like the situation's under control somewhat, but now there's a new situation at hand. And so how do we get to that? And how do we help, you know, how do we assist if we can, you know, if there's a way.
Right.
Plus like, yo, it was cool to have my partner's voice in the mix as well. Like, that's, you know, without being like too obvious as well, you know what I mean? I feel guarded about my personal life too when it comes to like just any like social media, and you know, I mean, little bits and pieces and shit, but like, you know, and records and whatnot. I'm not really trying to, like, you know, there's a lot of weird people out there.
So absolutely. Let's talk about New York City as a character and arguably the most important collaborator on this album. Can you talk about working with NYC as this narrative space and the impact location and sociological conditions have had on your creative decisions, as well as this featured cast to make up this canvas?
Indeed. The character of NYC in this play, you know, yeah, arguably a main character, you know, arguably like the main character, in certain regards, I guess. You know, I'm one to, you know, it asks the question of like, who owns this land? Who, you know, whose land is this? You know what I'm saying? And in the liner notes, I say, you know, this isn't our land to begin with. This wasn't our land to begin with. So it's certainly not yours, as I point the finger to everyone coming here and taking up the space, and taking the space away from the people who have made this the place that they want to come and inhabit. They want to come and visit. They want to come and spend money and build their bougie, you know, vegan cafes. And like I said, like, I don't know if I said this in another interview or not, but like, I am vegan, and like, it is a thing of like, oh cool, like sometimes it's cool when you have that option, you know what I'm saying? But a trend also seems that, you know, that's a slippery, it's a little thin line, because you cross over and you can be really the inaccessible, you know, vegan lifestyle situation that's like way just out of the price range of a certain demographic, basically. Like, and oftentimes the people who live in the area that you've just parked yourself or your business in, you know what I mean? So there is that honoring of, there is that like nod to the fact that like, this is a land that's already been stolen. So we don't own this yet. We live here. We've done the fucking time here and put our energy into like trying to make this place as livable as possible, given everything that goes on here, given all the administrative, you know, systemic things that are, that, you know, political things that have gone on here, that, you know, like, we don't fuck with the mayor, you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't fuck with, like, I'm not, you know, I don't want to own a block, you know what I'm saying? Like, and, or die for a block either, you know what I'm saying? But like, I've had friends who've been on that time, you know what I'm saying? So like, growing up here since the early 80s, you know, this place has been my home, you know what I'm saying? This place has been a place where it was, I mean, just seeing it change through the various eras and waves of things technologically, you know, technology adds the access, which in a lot of ways is a good thing, but then also has its dangers, has its pitfalls, you know, where people take that access and run with it and without understanding what that all means, you know what I'm saying? What it means to be a New Yorker, what it means to be a neighbor. Like I said, what it means to be a good neighbor, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, yo, we're all trying to be a solid neighbor out here. That's why I also selected the people here as like varying degrees of New Yorker. Like I've been saying, like, you know, you don't have to come from New York to necessarily be a New Yorker or to be honored as a New Yorker, you know what I mean? Like there's people who got that I guess like perspective and respect that through how they move with people, how they treat space, you know, that sometimes like speaks volumes over certain other people who were born here, you know what I mean? Like I've seen when I used to do my thing in the streets a little bit for a little while, you know what I mean? And like some of the people who I'd be making money off of, like they were like prep school kids and shit like that, you know what I'm saying? And they lived a completely different life than I've ever heard of, you know what I mean? I'm just like, oh, like this is a thing, like you have country houses, like, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm just like, oh, okay, well I'm glad I'm making bread off of you, you know what I mean? Like I'll sell you all the, you know, all the good smoke, you know what I mean? Right. Like, it is what it is. Like, yeah, I'll be your green thumb, you know? And the conversations always get interesting and you're like, wow, I gotta just check out of this shit and just treat this shit like a transaction. Cause it is, it literally is that. Now that's the thing. People come here and they feel like this, they live like everything is a transaction because that's all they know. They have the privilege and the money to buy that, to buy access, to buy, you know what I'm saying? To afford $3,000, $4,000 a month rent for just themselves or just, you know, as two people even in like a fucking studio, like where it doesn't even make no sense for anyone to be paying that type of bread. Like for the space you get or whatever, like just because you have a luxury looking lobby and a gym or like a swimming pool on the roof of your house or whatever, like, nah, like, but that's what...
Crazy.
Developers post 9/11, developers went crazy with that shit. Crazy. Like post 9/11 New York is different. You know what I'm saying? So like, and I was supposed to be there on 9/11. Like, and my pops had worked in a building that was connected to the Twin Towers and got like let off the job type shit with 1,000 other people on some like company acquisition shit or whatever, like a year before, you know, in I think 2000. So it was like right before 9/11, you know what I mean? Like, so I have a close relationship to that as well, in a way, you know what I mean? Like to that event.
If you're wasting the money on nukes, bombs, and going to fighting wars.
Pentecostal, Glock carrying pastor, the Holy Ghost in the rapture, fully auto drum circle. Devils in the details, spike proteins in the plasma, virgin whore Babylon, and Lucifer ace the gaslighter, converting brainwaves in artificial language data, know which direction the wind blows, how the feeble mind shatters, outthinking your movements, emotion and your actions, submitted through your own saliva sample.
You know, there's different eras of people on the album. You know, there's people who have been outside longer than me, like I like to say. There's people who are like my age or who have been active as long as I have, sharing the same spaces, you know, including like someone like Tim Otep, who did the liner notes, you know. And then there's folks who, you know, a lot of the folks are the folks who are kind of, you know, I don't know. It's not a good, coming up is not the word I would ever use to describe it, but more so like this, like, you know, younger wave of wizards to me, you know what I'm saying? I just say wizards, you know what I mean? Like masters of the craft or whatever, but you know, folks just like, the usual suspects, but also some new people in the fold. Like, you know, you got obviously Amani and Masai, Queso, you know, just, and then there's Nakama, Desde, a few other folks, you know what I mean? I shit. But the point being is like, yo, like, I wanted to sort of earmark those like various eras of experience and, you know, also erase the idea that like you have to have a certain amount of years in the shit to be nice, you know what I mean? Because that doesn't, if you have a unique voice, you're kind of, you just, no one can really test that, no one can take that away from you. So I'm of that mind. So I feel like, you know, someone who's, yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's just, everyone's so, got such a sharp blade or whatever that like, it don't matter if they're 20, 30, 40, 50, you know what I mean?
It's a big commentary you make on this album with respect to time.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. I think that's the thing too. Yeah, we could cross time, break shit. You know what I mean? Like time doesn't go forward and backwards. It goes sideways, up and down. It goes 360, whatever. You know what I mean? Like time is a fucking construct at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Mm. So like, you know, that's why like I released the shit on the Lunar New Year versus the you know, Gregorian calendar year, so to speak. Because I'd rather go by lunar than you know what I mean?
Got it.
Constructs of that world. So yeah, you know, I think you know, that's the Jean Grey bit, which
right,
you know, the sample on Untrappings, right before Dream Crusher comes in and starts addressing time literally by, you know, first word, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, I think there's plenty of space though as far as like hip hop is concerned, because hip hop is a hacking, you know, breaking of space, somewhat renegade culture and practice, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, all the practices rely on the fact that this is counter to, this is counter culture, this is counter to law, this is the thing that exposes the cracks in the law, you know, this, the asinine nature of law and lawmakers, you know what I'm saying? Like, down to sampling, you know what I mean? Down to the that's we can get into that further later on or whatever, if, or whatever you want, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I've been thinking, obviously I'm teaching the class or whatnot, I've been thinking a lot about sampling lately and having conversations and even been seeing little pieces, seeing new literature, seeing new writing appear where it's like, like there's a lack of mindfulness toward the idea that like all this shit is renegade, thus it should be treated with a certain respect to the artists, especially if these are independent artists and not like a corporation such as like Beyonce or Kanye or whoever, you know what I mean? Like J. Cole or whatever, like all those folks could be clearing samples. They don't, they could sneeze at a fucking lawsuit. But once you start talking about people sampling practices who are of like our so-called level or whatever, you know, like, nah, like leave that shit to the side, because who sampled doesn't, you know, we don't want to be on who sampled. You know what I mean? And we don't want the shit to be legal either. Like that's like that turns graffiti into street art.
You know what I'm saying?
Where it's just like you have the sterile, just goofy, and frankly, just corny or ugly. You know what I mean? Like objectively, not yeah. It's like not like factually. You know what I'm saying? It's not even like my opinion. Like, no, that shit is fucking terrible. Like, and oftentimes, you know, street art is an example of if you get the cassette of Shook World, the retail version that's literally coming in this week. Yeah, coming in tomorrow, matter of fact. Nice. You know, you're going to see the liner notes and you're going to see images that I pulled. The Barney Macy's Day Parade, I think it was Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, like massacre where Barney, you know, the Barney balloon gets like out of control and they gotta like deflate it. They have to like cut it open and like, you know, basically land it, like floor it. You see the Redbird trains getting dumped into the river. You're gonna see images of Harlem Music Hut and Tape Kings. And you're also gonna see a wall that has existed on Houston and I believe Bleecker Street. It's a famous wall that has been this like art wall for a while, and it's owned by these like this developed, like, you know, it's like, oh, it's an art wall, it's street art, but it keeps getting vandalized. Like, that's the narrative around it, but that shit is literally like owned by like some terrible fucking developer, like, you know, real estate development corporation and family for decades. And you know, like, damn right, that shit, every time you put some, you pay some artists, no matter where they come from, who they are, how they identify, whatever, like, we're gonna destroy your shit, rightfully so, because you've done this shit, you know, especially in that area. Like, yo, you talking about like what, so-called Soho or whatever, or like, you know, from the East Village to the LES to other parts of downtown, because that's even near like CBGBs or whatnot, which is now John Varvatos or Varvatos or whatever. It's just like, we walk by there and throw shit in that store now, you know what I'm saying? Like, who cares? Like, nah, like, I mean, that sounds like some dickhead shit, because it'd be the employees who were like, we're just trying to like pay their rent. They gotta pick that shit up. But like,
I get it,
you know, it's maybe we'll throw some shit at the glass, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Chinese New Year, you take the little poppers, you throw them at the glass. And, you know, just like, yeah, vandalism needs to exist. And vandalism isn't vandalism unless you're, until you're thinking of property and ownership in a certain way. And that's, you know, in order for things to change, like sampling law, like, you know, art, you know, street art laws and shit, you know what I mean? Graffiti laws or whatnot. Like, you've got to change a whole lot of people's ideas of what they can and cannot own. And that's, and yeah, that right there is never going to, that's not going to ever happen. That's just like, nah, that's why police exist. Like, no.
Going back to collaborations and going back to this theme of time on this project, I'm curious as to, out of this cast, this amazing cast on this project, who was the person you knew the least about collaborating with for this project? And how did you go about forging a relationship over the course of putting that specific song together?
Ooh, that's a good question. Damn, hold up. I actually like literally got to look this shit up. Because I'm like, wait, what?
There's a lot, right?
And I don't think anyone did, like, who do I know? That's a hard one to gauge, to be honest. I'd say, like, there were newer collaborators. There's collaborations I never did before. Like, for instance, like, this was my first time collaborating with, like, Marcus, a.k.a. Marcus Pinn, on the Wheels of Steel, on the decks. We had conversation before, but I've never met him in real life. That's one of the people I've never met in real life. Let's just say that. Or yet to. We've had phone convo. We've had many DMs since probably 2020. Maybe a little bit before that. Maybe 2019. But definitely by 2020, we were in conversation. I bought one of his instrumental tapes. And like, I saw that he was nice on the turntables. And I was like, oh, you actually do this shit. And this is the album that I was going to return to that on. Like, I was like, really... that was in class. I was previous class. I was like mentioning that, like, last year I was, I think, talking about, maybe I tweeted about it one time, like, I'm gonna be back on the turntables and do my turntablism thing. Like, I could feel it. But you know, I wanted that to be an element in here because that was an element of my upbringing slash obviously an element of, you know, hip hop, so to speak. I don't love like talking about like the four elements of hip-hop, the five elements of hip-hop, like, I don't really, it's fine, like, I just don't really go there. But I think he was probably the one. I mean, he was just down. He was like, he was always been down. He's like, yo, if you ever want, I'm like, yo, I definitely want to do something with you. And I sent him the two or three joints. I'm just like, gave him the like, yo, all right, textural. Let's do textural. Let's think Mr. Len and Terminator X instead of DJ Premier. You know what I mean? And he was just like, got you. And I'm like, bet. And he gave me a bunch of takes and I just took bits of each take and kind of in time. I wasn't like remixing. No, I was just, it was all in time, but I was like taking, had both takes kind of like running at the same time. It was just muting one side and then muting the other side, whatever cut that sounded or made more sense in that area part of the song or whatever. Other than that, I'm looking at everyone else. I mean, everyone else is people that I see kind of on the regular. Obviously Dream Crusher, my man Harlem Boog. I mean, Big Just is someone who I haven't seen in decades, but that was my homie. That was like my guy. That's been my guy since the 90s, since Fun Crusher, you know what I mean, since Fun Crusher Plus. I don't know if I said, I might have said this on the previous Black Fidelity, but I had interned for Ozone.
That's right.
So I was putting up stickers for the Fun Crusher Plus. I was putting up Fun Crusher Plus stickers all over Manhattan, and I think Manhattan only. Yeah, I don't think I was really going to Brooklyn too much that around that time. So yeah, but Just always showed me mad love. Justin Len especially were always mad cool. So I was just like, yo, I really want to like point to this lineage of my own time doing this shit and like being a part of these communities or circles or coalitions. It's just like, yeah, like it's got to be someone like Just. And I've always like his music was like his solo stuff is fucking mind blowing to me. Also shout out to you for having just one of the few interviews with him. You know what I mean? So everyone go back and listen to the Big Just Flat Fidelity interview.
Appreciate.
But yeah, he was super, super present, like just calling in because he doesn't live in New York anymore or whatever, doesn't live in it around here anymore. So he was just like, you know, checking in with me, like, yo, I got this, but I just want, you know, I just want to give a little more time to a certain, I want to make sure my tone is correct, da da da. Like he had like little sections, and that's why, like, if you listen carefully, the tone change, like elements of his voice changes with each kind of like, I guess, discernible paragraph maybe in his rhyme.
Right.
So like I was intentionally changing like the effects on his voice or textures throughout the verse. Throughout like sections of sectioning off parts of the verse and shit. Yeah, that was mad fun to work with because he already gave me something that was affected already. Like his voice was going through like an amp or something. It was interesting. I was like, oh, okay, here we go. And I was like, word. And also Noland, who comes after, who ends the album. We just had conversation and she's just a very like, I don't know, again, like I come to this word present, but her, like the way that she collaborates with a lot of people and a lot of friends of mine. And we've had this, like we've showed each other love, like on some like, yo, like I'm a huge, like I love her words. I love the way she delivers them. I love how she like, you know, is a New Yorker, downtown New Yorker, really like does her land honoring, really does just like, she's about it. So I was just like, yo, on some poetry shit, like it would be ill to have you on this alongside like Latasha, you know, Haram, you know what I'm saying, et cetera, et cetera. And it was like, she was down. She was like, yo, she came back. She like, I hadn't heard from her for a second. And she came back and was like, yo, like you still got room? And I'm like, oh, you still got time, whatever. And I'm like, yo, yes.
Perfect.
Sent it right away. And I'm like, yo, this is ill. And it went like, yeah, the track I had, the music I had made was just kind of sitting, and I'm like, I know exactly what goes to this, what can go to this, and yeah, the nice. Way it was like ASMR-y too, so we're talking about textures and whatnot. Yeah, it was fun. So everything was like really like, this is why I'm so hype on this, because everything was just so
organic, right?
Like, organic, yeah, organic. You know, it's a holistic collaborative experience. Nah, you know, it was really, you know, maybe that speaks to like all of that. That speaks to all of us. So, you know, patting all of us on the back right now. You know what I mean?
What about Latasha Diggs even? How does that come about? How did you connect with Latasha?
I met Latasha through Matana Roberts, who's also on the track, who I had to add to the track after the fact. Because I was just like, yo, I have you playing sax in my studio. And, you know, she came to my studio. She came to the studio in like 2018, I want to say. Maybe it was 2019. It could have been 2019. She came through and just blew. You know what I mean? Just it was for something different that's not even out yet. This album that I've been working on with this individual that's not even out yet. And I was like, all right. Well, I have this here. You've been saying that you'd be down to do more. So could I use this for this track with Latasha? Cause you're the reason why I know Latasha. We met, last year, early 2022, doing a ensemble piece with Matana at Columbia University. And, it's called Sandy Speaks, about Sandra Bland. And Latasha and I were both doing what was called word speak. So we were just basically like working off of each other. And obviously Matana being the orchestrator, the maestro, giving us cues, and we would just come in and read and repeat and speak various words of these texts that were about like, state, you know, state issued, violence, so to speak, like police.
Right.
Texts about police and policing in America. And yeah, we just vibed. And she was like, yo, like, I've been trying to contact you. Like, Latasha was telling me, like, yo, I've been emailed you. And I thought I emailed you. And I'm like, I don't think I ever got that email. Holy shit. Well, we're here now. And then from that point on, after the performance, it was like, yo, let's keep this going. And yeah, yo, when she came to the studio, we just had wild stories to tell. Yeah, she just has a very ill history, as a poet, as just like as a performer in general. You know, I don't know if she wants me to tell the story, but I'm not gonna tell the story. But you know, she used to dance too, so she was like in community with like a lot of folks who, you know, like that, you know, early 90s, I guess, from what I'm understanding, like era of like all like the clubs, where clubs was different in New York, you know what I'm saying, where it was like house music in one room, and then cast, you know, folks would move over to the hip hop room, and it just, everyone mix it up, and it'd be like the funk room or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, clubs like Mars and maybe Save the Robots, I'm not sure, but like, you know, the Muse, I think, was probably a spot they're going to, Red Zone, shit like that, shit that you hear about, you know what I mean? And you're like, damn, like, you live that, you know, with like Mop Top and Misfits crews and folks who are like in like Michael Jackson videos and shit, like Big Les from Rap City and shit. It's just like, damn, like, you got an ill ass sister. So I was just geeking off of that because I'm such a fan of like movement and like that element of it, you know, expression, or rather like even that history here. Because that was a thing, you know, dancing was like a big part. And like, I used to break, and you know, even now to this day, like you see what it is, like kids getting sturdy, you know, before that it was like light feet, like, which is represented on this album, you know, that Good Money interlude and the end of the Nakama track, you know what I'm saying? All that like chicken noodle soup, it's showtime, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you see videos like on IG, I'm sure, on YouTube, kids on the train, like, yeah, going crazy, flipping their hat around or whatnot. Like, that's, you know, that's light. That's part of getting light. You know what I mean? That's an uptown style of dancing. Yeah. So I wanted that represented too. You know what I mean? I wanted to have that in there because I was like, oh, I never, yeah, like, why not? That's the element. That's definitely like, that's in the fabric of New York culturally, you know?
Latasha was a part of this spoken word explosion in New York. I'm curious as to if you remember the first time you felt electrified by a poem or the poet who spoke the poem. Where were you and what was that moment like?
Definitely, I was probably at the New Yorican. Probably at the New Yorican Poets Cafe. It's probably with Saul Williams, you know what I'm saying? Damn, I mean, I feel like I've seen a lot of them, like Sarah Jones, I always gotta give big up, Mums the Schemer, rest in power. Yeah, yo, just there were mad folks who were, you know, because that was a thing there, like it was like, you know, there were open mics and whatnot, and that's always where heads rub shoulders. It was always like, it was not really like, there was a separation in certain regards, but it wasn't like, oh, like, this is that weird, like, artsy, you know, y'all the weird, like, artsy people or the hippies or whatever, and when we're the hip-hop kids. Like, nah, it's like, it was all hip-hop, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, like, to me, what they were doing, like, that's the thing. I don't even use the term spoken word or whatever. I think Latasha and I have spoken about this. It's like, you know, it's all poetry, right? Like, rap is poetry. you know, what is referred to as spoken word or just like spoken poetry, you know what I mean? Is, you know, no beat or whatever. That, see, that's the thing. Poetry does have a beat. Everything got a beat. Everything got a rhythm. So Saul Williams is a rapper to me or at least blurs the fuck out that line. You know what I'm saying? Everyone's a lyricist, but not every... Okay, nah, you know what? It's the opposite, but all right. All rappers are poets. All poets are not rappers. And that's just, I guess, part of that. Maybe that's a utility thing. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not here to draw the line. Like, I'm not here to define the line either. I think like folks like Saul Williams, especially was one of the folks who was really kind of blurring that. And then later on, like, or, you know, around that time too, like, APC, Antipop, folks like Priest or like Beans, you know what I'm saying? Like the way they were kind of like rocking was like, oh, this is okay, this is different. And even like shout out to like folks on the West Coast, like Dark Leaf, you know what I'm saying? You might know them from like the Beneath the Surface compilation that Omid did in like 98-99 or so. Like that was what was so captivating about that crew to me. It was just like, oh, like they're doing something different. And like there's a care here for language versus, you know, trying to fit a pocket sometimes. Like, I don't know. It's just something. I'm like obsessed with language. So yeah, I think, I guess, you know, so yeah, Saul Williams would probably be my answer for that question. And like, just getting, just like, yo, what are you doing? Like, how do you write this? You know what I'm saying? Or like, how do you come up with this and like then perform, memorize it and perform it? And you got the long piece of paper just trailing off stage and you just doing this. Oh, it's like, damn, like this is ill. Like that's some MC shit.
Yep.
Wizardry shit. Facts. You know what I'm saying? Latasha got a book out called Village, a new book out called Village. And I mean, and so, what's it called? Inferno is on that. Inferno is in that. And she's read a few other pieces from that. We recorded a few different poems and just chose Inferno. And it was just like, damn, like I wanted her. She was one of the top runners to be at the start of the album. And then I find the recording of that April morning in 2020 with the house fire, and I'm like, yo, like that's bugged out, like I forgot I had that. And then her song is about like there is a house fire, it's called Inferno 1992, you know what I'm saying? I'm just like, yo, so it had to happen. It was like the universe was just telling me no, like this is meant to be, like this is as it should, you know what I mean? I'm like, all right, I'm not going to question you. Let's go.
What's going on? If you are still listening to this episode and enjoying the podcast, why not become a patron of Fly Fidelity at patreon.com/flyfidelity. Becoming a patron means you are directly supporting our show and helping us to create a new episode each and every week. It also means that as a thank you for being a super supporter, you'll be able to access exclusive content to you, including patron updates, offers and discounts, a monthly secret podcast, early access, and so much more.
I think like the magic of having Kid Capri, like a snippet of Kid Capri being like, you know, that's like Kid Capri is a fucking god as far as like mixtapes. And, you know, he was selling $20 mixtapes back in 89, you know what I'm saying? So like, that's why I'm selling $20 cassette tapes now. You know what I mean? It's like, no, like that's a standard, you know what I mean? Like, fuck that, like fuck a $10 mixtape or fuck a $10 cassette tape. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's cheaper than fucking digital files at this point, you know? So like, nah, like we're getting out the trunk. We're doing it this, you know, we keep it holding up the tradition. You know, Kim's video was putting out some of Kid Capri's mixtapes prior to Tape Kings. Then later on, Tape Kings became, I guess, his distributor or whatever. But also, I just had a lot of Tape Kings was like more my era. Kim's stores were my era, but like the mixtapes were predate me as far as like buying mixtapes. That was again like the late 80s, I feel like, and early 90s, I guess. Unless they were doing represses. I don't quite understand, but I definitely have like a couple Kid Capri mixtapes that are that was a head bust for me, because I'm like, yo, this Kid Capri tape doesn't say Tape Kings on it. It says Kim's Video, when they were just a laundromat selling right. like VHSs and apparently cassette tapes or mixtapes like out the back of, you know what I mean? I was just like, that's wild. Like, damn, that's a connection I did not see. So I tweeted about that like a year or two ago when I was like doing my research. I'm like, holy shit. So I was just like, yo, like let's allude to this. So that's why you have those like moments of like found, you know how you like found sound and it's like, oh, that's a train passing or that's a whatever, some windows being broken, like environmental sounds, like the environment is also those sounds. The mixtape was a part of that environment, was a part of my environment or our environment, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, that's a natural choice for me. If I'm going to be talking about, you know, New York City and the various eras and signaling toward that. Yeah, that's found sound. You know what I'm saying? Like Kid Capri is a found sound. Ron G is a found sound. You know what I mean?
What about chaos? How important was chaos as a key in unlocking this texture or rawness from this world you've created? And how'd you go about and maintaining a stillness in the midst of all that chaos?
Oh, that's a good ass question. Well, yeah, there's points of like give and take, I think. And that's just, it's always maintaining a balance, you know? Like there has to be some form of like, I can't just go full chaos mode and just like downpour and destroy. Even like in a Centennial Gardens, like even in like the most so-called like noise type situation that I'm involved in, like there's quietude as well. There's also like messages of peace. It's not just like kill everything, murder, death, kill or whatever. Like, nah, like, you know, noise can be beautiful. Noise can be peaceful too. So it's just a matter of like how you look at, like, you know, like a sound bath, right? So it's like, you know, again, like my first noise that I ever really encountered was, and chaos on record that I really encountered was Public Enemy. So picture that as an allusion to that, you know what I mean? Like that's how I'd frame it, because that's in my, that's my DNA sonically, you know what I mean? You know, Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers, that type shit. It's just like there's those moments where things stop and it's just people talking in a room and you're like, yo, what? And then sometimes that's chaotic. Sometimes that's more chaotic than Can It Be All, you know, Can It All Be So Simple Then or whatever. Okay, I get that title always fucks Absolutely. Up, but like, you know what I mean? Like that shit is smooth. Even Cream in a way is like, it's introspective. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's almost like it's kind of heartbreaking. You know, it's a blues song. You know what I mean? Cream is a blues anthem. You know what I'm saying? But there's still like, there's this, it's not chess boxing. It's not Protect Your Neck, you know, or Method Man or Bring the Ruckus. You know what I'm saying? So for me, you know, there's points where there's room for all of that, because that's the reality and just the positive and negative, or the push and pull of life and existence in itself. So yeah, yo, I mean, I really wanted to go places with this shit just because I had the room. And was given like a lot. Also just like, it was a thing of like, yo, like you gotta make an hour mixtape. Like it has to be 60 minutes. You know, like I gotta knock Funkmaster Flex's 60 minutes of funk out the box. You know what I mean?
Now.
You know who it is?
No.
It's my man.
Who?
Funk Master Flex.
Go Flex. Go Flex. Go Flex.
If you come to my class, you hear me teach, the first thing I'll tell you is like there's music in silence. You know what I'm saying? I could allude to plenty of people, really. I could allude to like a J Dilla beat. The reason why Dilla shit swung the way it did is because he left space for the swing to occur.
Mm.
You know what I mean? There's space to breathe and all that. That's what makes it so perfect for someone to... Well, that's what makes it perfect for someone to like play the instrumental out, because he had such a mean rhythm section. He had such a mean, you know, low end to his shit. You know what I'm saying? Even with like a loop, like a soul loop, you know, with no drums on it, etc., you know, RZA style. It's like there's a quietude almost, or like a trance like state that you get when you get into when you listen to a loop for a long time, right? That's like a core tenet of like drone music and things of that nature, right? So when you have that, and you have that kind of, you have that in like a soul loop or whatever, you have that in a loop that's like minimal, that there's a space there that then when you throw someone on top of that, then that's the dynamic shift, because now their voice and their words, their pocket is the, like that becomes kind of almost like the rhythm section. That's almost like a Coltrane solo. So like that, like understanding all that is like how then I approach the whole, like the grand work, like the big picture, as they say. So it's like, I'm going to try to give you the yin and yang. I'm going to try and give you like the heavy, slow, or like, fast and hectic, that whole Good Money situation that then like boils down into the doom, like the doom guitar moment, or like the drone, like the Sun Boris kind of like drone guitar moment, or really Corrupted. That's who actually I was like kind of thinking of, this Japanese band that does all the songs in Spanish called Corrupted. Yeah. That's sick, yo. Yeah, people should check them out. If you want like heavy, slow music, you know, and the part in between where I'd like Ron Browse, his auto-tune voice, like he's saying the thing, he's saying what's happening. It's like, yo, we're jumping out the window. You know what I mean? Like this is just going all like, fuck it. We're just baby with the bathwater. We're out. Like it's done.
Right.
Chaos. You know what I mean? People, that's the whole point of like, that then goes into the chaos of like this slow, syrupy or viscous guitar, you know, behemoth. But then on the flip side, on top of that, you have all this fast talking, frantic, panic, you know, little clips of people like vloggers and apartment, you know, gentrifiers and colonizers, essentially, like, you know, threatening police violence, you know, yeah, just like talking crazy, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. This place is dangerous. Homeless people, and so like you have all that frantic shit happening over like this like long winding like three notes in 10 minutes kind of situation. It's like I love that. I love contrast, you know what I mean? I'm a sweet and savory person, so that's me. So like dealing with that chaos every day with my taste palette is like, I guess, how I got here sonically.
Serums, people complaining, we've been peeping like a Rico. It's best you try and keep it secret.
Oh, you thought they had your corner, bro? Nah, them niggas take orders, bro.
It's like we hustle by the corner store, keep it
low and watch the words you say, cause they be tapping phones. Got a chat in codes, how I be writing poems, and y'all be liking them songs. You can try and play hero, watch you die on a cross, or you can go inside with it, getting right with the source. You know, gotta draw a line in the sand, cause niggas trying to save the world, I'm trying to save my family, cause niggas live in fantasy land. Nope. What? If you know, then you know. That's the phrase that we hope, but we really should live it.
As somebody who digs into crates and finds a lot of value in singular notes and elements, what was it about Algiers' Shook sample pack that stood out to you? What was it that worked for you?
I really appreciated how they constructed, or where they were going with their sonics on Shook. You know, to me, Shook reminded me a lot of, like, I think I said this before, like this, like it has like this, like, I don't know why I keep going to this. And I think it was like an old PC game, like an old cyberpunk dystopian, whatever type video game called Future Shock. And I keep saying that shit, like that shit just makes wild sense to me. Like this ill, like almost like, you know, I'm like picturing like Rem LZ and like a mech suit over here. And I'm, you know, there's like, you know, elevation stations of the elevated playing, being projected onto a wall, and there's just like mad metal, you know what I mean? Like I'm just that's what I'm seeing when I hear Shook, like in the, especially in the production, you know. And I mean also in the content of you know, whether it's Frankie or whoever, you know, whoever else is the orator for that moment in that album, it's just like, yo, like I think the synths and the way that the drums kind of are paying an homage to like early 80s hip hop in New York, specifically like the drum machine, Larry Smith, Curtis Blow, that kind of vibe, the wild style element, you know what I mean? Like that they literally, like the first song, there's that train into the like the same, like just like Illmatic.
Right,
and I was
right.
Like, oh, I see what y'all did there. That's why I have the train in my shit. I heard the train passing overhead. I took my phone out. I was like, and I was like, all right, I'm going to use this. This is going to be like an intro somewhere. This is going to be something on the album because I want to like ping pong with their ideas. So for me, it was just like, it was inspiring to hear that album, but then also to crack into like just the specific sounds. And once you start doing that, I'm going for like the most background sound. The most like minute moments, little things, then trying to stretch them out and make them into something different. So taking single like seconds worth of like music and making new, essentially, you know, new loops or new, yeah, just new can, you know, just throwing that on the canvas and being like, okay, I'll build around this. Like this sound speaks to me. And it's always that's the same thing, the same approach I have when I listen to like anything that I want to sample. It's just like, does it make me, like, does it affect me some way? If it affects me, then I think it'll work for other people too. So I think my style, like from this album, if you listen to this album or Pain of Mind and An Unknown Infinite or Quattro, I think like each of those albums kind of have their own soundscape. And I think this one certainly changes or adds on to the range, I guess, of like a King Vision Ultra narrative, or whatever discography or whatever, as far as like sonics are concerned. Like, I think my sound changed for this album, for the most part, you know what I mean? And
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, certainly because I was thinking like Future Shock and, you know, metal and I love that, like drum machine rap, like all that like early 80s shit. Once again, the Run DMC, Fat Boys, all that shit.
Larry,
like,
Smith, absolutely. Yeah.
LL Cool J, etc. You know,
Davey DMX.
Yeah, Mantronics and all that. Come on.
Sheesh. I'm curious as to how you approach developing texture going into an artist's, you know, already established palace of sonic ideas and distinction. How long does it typically take you to reach a pivotal point of destination sonically? And do you have a specific philosophy when it comes to adding multi-note bassline samples?
Wow. Okay. Nice. I You know, sometimes that's a, okay. So to speak to the first part about how long does it take, you know, how some of those beats came together very quickly. Like, so we're going back to the organic thing. I think it was partially due to the fact that I felt like a time pressure, or I was putting myself on a time on the clock a little bit. Cause again, this whole album, the album itself was made in a month. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Then, you know, then the finishing touches were done with a little bit more time and room to play with. It wasn't as pressurized, but it still was like, all right, like got to get this shit out before Shook, because that was the plan. So a lot of those beats were like one or two a night, you know what I mean? Like, or, you know, like say for instance, like Clean Facelift, the Maasai joint, I made that after making, I think, Stand On It and maybe, you know, and Shatterproof. You know what I mean? I had Shatterproof as a loop for a while. I just didn't have the drums for it, or I didn't have the rhythm section down. So I didn't have the bass or the drum for it necessarily. But I was like, yo, that guitar is so crazy. And this little, like, these synths and things that are coming in and out. You're right. Now I'm thinking about the bass line aspect. Mm. Wow.
There's a lot.
That was something different. Yo, all right. So that's something that I used to do a lot on the MPC back in the 90s and shit.
Oh really?
Yeah. Not as effectively. Let's just put it like that. Like my like tuning and you know, ideas, learnings, understandings of like tune, harmony, whatever, we're not up to snuff yet. That's when I just started. I was just like trying to make like chaotic, like ill, just, you know, I love like Co Flow, and I love Wu-Tang, and I, you know what I mean? And I'm just listening to all this shit. I'm just like, oh yeah, like Dr. Octagon or whatever. And I'm just like, cool. Like obviously Dr. Octagon, like Shadow and them, they were on a bit more different time. They were definitely very like melodic, like melody forward. Whereas like to me, L, Bomb Squad, you know what I'm saying? I mean, L comes from Bomb Squad, right?
These albums are moments that seep into this album itself sonically. You can hear Company sure. Flow, you can hear Wu-Tang.
Yeah, sure. Not sure. To come. Well, what's okay? So funny part, someone was just like, yo, in a conversation was like, yo, Shatterproof, like the bass line of that sounds like, is that Collude Intrude, the same sample? I'm like, I honestly don't know what L sample for Collude Intrude, but it's certainly similar. Like it's the same, like you know, rhythmic and melodic motif. It's just a two note, da-dum, ba-dum. You know what I mean? L had right. This dun 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 dun, and I don't think I went that crazy with it. I think part of it too was the utility of like taking apart like a drum break, or taking apart like the start of a loop, even like well-known loops, and filtering the shit out of them and making them into bass lines and like making them kind of play themselves out. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, starting to play them out. Like the fragment is what's interesting to me. You're going to hear some more shit. I'm on some shit right now. Like the next shit that I'm going to come out with, you know, certainly has some shit. I got some ideas in my head that, you know, yeah, yo. Anyway, but I think it's a lot of that is also just like just filtered bass lines. Like, yo, like I learned that shit from like the Beat Miners and Pete Rock and, you know, folks like that. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
But yeah, yo, that's crazy. Like you just hit me with that. Like, damn, multi-note bass lines. Like, yeah, that is the thing that I really did. That was the thing on this album specifically. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna do this here. Okay, this works here too. Like, let's go. It's just like, cause I was making, I made like a lot of those beats like within a week, 2 weeks time, you know, cause everyone else needed to record, write and record. So like people are turning the verses around like within a couple of days and coming into the studio right away. And I'm nice. Like, which is so wild, yo. Like, yeah, everyone did such fucking incredible work on that shit.
We got KVU shit. rate him. Etchings in his name to make amends before the unfortunate dissolution of links like Raider Clan. Pithy diatribes and tinkering with alchemy to in-between. I can't imagine a death mask on me that wouldn't fetch a ransom. Grave diggers rage and ran through inconsequential tantrums. While my MO caused gray matter, memos deemed more relevant as denunciations of reverence. The praise chatter stayed missing context like, hey, batter. 10 toes on loaded bases in my separatist bag. Dabbing deplorables and chain snatches. Like, fuck all that elegant rap. Sold fertile spaces, but never grew nothing Mesopotamian adjacent. I was worried about raising seeds around a bloodthirsty Albanian.
I think one of the bass lines that was at Algiers was on Cole Hex. I took fragments of like the bass line that was in Cold World. I believe that's the name of their song. There's a sample, the Cold World, and then the joint starts. Yeah. But that was one of the only joints that I think I used one of their basses. Everything else was like from like pretty well known sources, actually. Like, well, you know, if you're like a DITC fan or whatever, I feel like you've heard a lot of those samples, but just not like that. And that's my point. Like, I want to flip well-known shit. I want to flip like the most well-known shit. Bob James, Eat Your Heart Out, you know what I mean? Try to find me and play that game of like, all right, well, all right, try to ID it, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
I want to flip some shit that like, or even if it's ideable, at least like I want to flip it in a way that like other folks haven't, you know? So if it's a David Axelrod loop or some shit, you know, like on like Unknown Infinite, I want it to be just, you know what I mean? At least just a little different in my time of like, just like going to my residency at the moment or whatever and listening to Shook and studying it and like listening for sounds before I even tapped into the stem pack. I'm just like, okay, like I want to flip something from this song, cause I hear this moment. I hear a sound on this song, yada, 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 yada. It's like, I'm spending time in that world of collaboration. I'm spending time in that world of, you know, honoring home, you know what I mean? Theirs is Atlanta. Theirs is a very different story. But the same principles, so to speak. So like, I was like, well, of course, like they're like, make it your own. They said that to me in the first message. They're like, you know, bring your people in, feel free. You don't have, this is not a remix album. And I'm like, bet, cool. And I'm like, well, I'll take that theme and do my own version of it. Cause that's literally like, that's going to happen inevitably, or that's going to happen. Yeah, that's going to be, that's inevitable. Like,
right.
If you take your own version, if you take that idea, or if a different person in New York takes that idea, it's going to be their own version of it. You know what I'm saying? Sky Zoo has a very specific version of his experience in New York, his experience as a person in Brooklyn, from Brooklyn, you know what I'm saying? As a person who's addressing gentrification, his version sounds very different than my version. Yet we're still talking about the same, a lot of the same things, you know what I'm saying? Or addressing a lot of the same.
Just a different brushstroke, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Different brushstroke, different, like, you know, colors on the canvas or whatever, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, rather on the easel or whatever. Like, wait, easel or canvas? I'm forgetting. Anyway, the shit that you hold and you've got the paint, like, different selection of paint, you know what I mean? But yeah, we're all. Kind of we're speaking to the same, you know, the same themes and whatnot, because this is something that's universally felt or whatever. And you know, home is important, right?
Speaking of home, speaking of something being universally felt, I'm wondering if we could talk about the field recordings. You mentioned Recorded a Train earlier. I'm wondering how important is it for sounds to be experienced appealing to the body as much as they are to the ear, in your opinion? Do you have to physically feel the sound of a field recording in order for it to be effective?
Damn, okay. Yeah, I would say I want to present sounds that are visceral. Or in a way that makes them visceral. So that goes into how I'm, that goes into timing when they're presented. That goes to, you know, the texture. So that's me EQing things. That's me, you know, even leveling things like volume, you know what I mean? Volume. Yeah, I want to, I do believe that something like, you know, the train is a very specific, very visceral, like it's almost like assault in a lot of cases.
It is.
Upon one's senses when like one passes by, one pulls in, pulls out, the screeching of brakes, the you know, just metal fucking, the smell of metal burning sometimes depending on the station, you know what I mean? You know, the sound of the doors, et cetera, et cetera. Like there's everything like speaks to that. Everything is like transportative almost in that experience. Right. And, you know, damn, like mostly downright fucking loud. It's like, you know, it's like a My Bloody Valentine show or some shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, like you're not going to forget it. You know, you're going to feel it. Right. So obviously we're not in the train station. You're not listening to this shit. You're not even, maybe not even listening to this shit dumb loud or whatever. And I'm not trying to like assault people either. Like that's not the key, but I do want to present these environments in a way where it is, I guess, transportative, you know what I'm saying? And viscerality plays a part in that, and communicating that viscerality through, again, like timing and texture, especially, I think is the way I see it as being effective. You know, if someone else could do it a different way, you know, there's people who are, and you know, maybe I've done this too, where like you make something, like make a soundscape, make a beat even out of something that is a so-called field recording, you know what I mean? And you just make that in, like there's a melody in a lot of that shit too, you know, there's a musicality for sure in a lot of that. What seems mundane or what seems like just noise again, right? But like I said, like there's a music and there's even a piece in noise. So yeah, I'd say you're hearing people speak too. You're hearing people on the train having conversations with either themselves or other people. And with all of that, you get the rhythm of the voice. You get a rhythm of how they're, like their cadence, right? Their sort of, the accents and the slang, even like the way that they bend certain words or whatever. That's all a big part of it to me. I think that's all part of the music, part of the score. I like the musical part of the score. It's not just a narrative device. Sometimes, yeah, I've been referring to this shit as a play because it's like trying to actually like figure out a way to get this on stage. It's like, you know what I mean? It's some like, oh, like this is like Midsummer Night's Dream, but like obviously way iller. But like, you know what I mean? I'm just like, yo, like that's a lot of funding I'm gonna have to, like, you know, it's a lot of resources that's needed. Cause this isn't just about like, oh, we're all gonna rap and we're all gonna do our little piece and be out. It's like, nah, like I'm trying to like bring the world into, I'm trying to transform a space into Shook World. And that means like, you know, having dancers included. That means having, you know, the turntablism element there. That means having the guitar element there. You know what I mean? With, if Algiers can't make it, although I would love to have them included. And you know, I, you know, not like a live band hip hop thing. That's what I don't want to do. I'm very much against that. You know, the Roots are great, but when I saw like, I've seen too much of that. It's like, oh, like it's our anniversary of this album. We're gonna do the whole album, but with a live band. I'm like, oh fuck. Because texturally, that's not the same thing. It just doesn't translate. It hardly ever. It always falls flat to me. oftentimes falls flat, you know, it's just, and it, you know, maybe that's on me. Maybe that's stupid, foolish of me to like think that we could achieve something that was done in a studio in a certain time many years ago, years later on a stage in a different room with different people, you know, and aged and all that. But like, nah, man, like, I don't think replacing Havoc's drums with some person on a drum set is gonna, that doesn't compute.
Right, right. Well, you said it yourself earlier. You're trying to turn people's expectations upside down. You're trying to subvert, you know, what it is people expect from this. There's something, I will say this, there's something to be said about the way these Sonics move from track to track in terms of transportive quality within them. You said you wanted to allude, you know, to an earlier specific era and moments that spoke to what the language of New York was at various times throughout NY history. Are you paying homage to Dipset with the song "You Already"?
Yeah, Slick. Sure. It is like us. Yeah, it's sped up. Yo, you know what's actually fucking crazy? I first sampled that joint back on the MPC ASR 10 days, Triton rack days. When I was making those Dipset beats, I made, like, that was a beat that I had made, and like, I first used that sample and "You Already," and also not "Sleepwalkers," but it's actually from the same joint. In like 2000, 2001 or something like that. And yeah, maybe I was certainly under the influence of like Dipset, certainly, you know, Cam at that time. Yeah, wow. It was that and like RZA, to be honest, back then, and even in the concept or the theme of it now, where it's just like, you know, soul loop, sped up, you know, sped up voices, or just sped up soul loop, so it sounds and takes on a certain texture. Yeah. It's Dipset, it's Wu-Tang, like early Wu-Tang, 90s Wu-Tang, let's just say. Yeah, that's crazy, B word.
What did Dipset mean to you, you know, during their peak? As a fan back then.
What did Dipset mean at their peak?
Yeah, to you as a fan.
To me. Yeah. They were Harlem, you know, uptown Manhattan. Because it wasn't just actually Harlem, too. Like, they made references to Washington Heights and whatnot. So there was like this thing of like East and West Side, Manhattan, upper Manhattan, basically. So that was just like so fucking super New York, you know what I mean? And like their style, although very accentuated and on like damn near, or rather eccentric, was still something that like was an animation upon the style that we were rocking, you know, amongst ourselves or in the street or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So like fitted hats, big, like fitted hats with mad wild room. Like you get a fitted oversized by like however many sizes. And, you know, either you could throw a bandana or whatever, you know, some people had do-rags, obviously I'm not rocking a do-rag, but like, you know, you have like room for things to be inside the cap. Some people put in like, you know, I've put bags of weed in the shit, you know what I mean? Like, razor blades, whatever the fuck, in the lining and like the band of it. And, or like, just like, you just had that shit so you could rock it and kind of like rock it however you want. Like I'm doing a around the head motion right now. You know, 1 minute you'll be facing forward, 1 minute it'll be like on, like sitting below your eyebrows so no one can see your face or your eyes or whatever. Like all that shit was also utility if you were playing a block or if you were, you know, had a reason to be sort of on stealth mode, so to speak. You know, certainly the boots, it wasn't just Tim's, you know, later on they got on the ACG boots before they became cop attire. And you know, there's like they were wearing Skywalks too, Basque Skywalks and whatnot. I remember, you know, they had the camo. I had the same joints that I think Jim had at one point. not because of Jim, it was just like that was the uptown thing too. This certain Italian boot brand called Vasque. It was like Gore-Tex boots and shit. They were popular in the 90s. Yeah, they were popular in the 90s. And then there was like store BJ's uptown, like 140s Dipset area, basically. Well, you know, Dipset Taliban area, you know what I mean? That's you know, that was one of the stores that had these boots in like colors that like I've never seen before, you know what I mean? So it was just like, okay, boom, like go uptown, get you some flavors, and then, you know, you got something to match your fitted cap that's a custom color. It's not the team color that you get from Pegasus on Third Avenue. You know what I'm saying? Like my barber was the same barber that Frankie Cutlass went to on Lex and one, well, I think it was like 110th, 100th or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So I see Frankie Cutlass in the cut. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh shit, what up? You know what I mean? Like Spanish Harlem shit, El Barrio shit. So like, you know, me spending a lot of time up there during that time too, was just like, yo, like I used to be in 1199, the nines is what people called them, 1199, which is where like you hear Cam shout that out early on. I think in the, my hood on SDE, I think. But certainly throughout his career, he's that out because I feel like he spent some time there. Duke the God from Dipset is from there, like lived there, had a parrot. Like being in his crib, you know what I mean? So like me getting to do shit, be around them at that time, like during like Diplomatic Immunity 2 and like Purple Haze, which I was supposed to be on, but
really?
Yeah, there was a beat that Cam had chosen, but it just didn't get to him in time for some reason. Let's just say I never knew what happened there, and it's fine. Like I'm not mad about it. It's okay. But I got a good check from that, the Hell Rel joint. You know, I think that was just like almost like, I don't know I was just dumb happy. I was just dumb hype. I was just like, yo, this is wild. Like, this is not a world away. This is right here. Like, I'm here, you know, we're in Jewel's studio in Jersey, the one that you later on see in Smack DVD, then also that got raided later on. You know, like, yeah, like, not that I like had anyone on speed dial or whatever, but it was just definitely like, okay, like I'm around these cats. Like, it's not just, and like seeing them pull around, like I'd see McGruff actually, speaking of like Children of the Corn, early Dipset kind of, wow, you know, family shit. Like McGruff would always come to the store Pegasus that I used to hang out at. I would just go to the store, see my man Juice, see, you know, a couple other heads who I knew there, you know what I mean? Just hang out, talk shit, talk music, whatever. Post up, you know, make a colors, you know what I'm saying, and buy an outfit type shit. Like, and McGruff would come in, and you know, various other people would come in. Sometimes rappers would come in before like their appearance on 106 and Park, just to get like a new champion hoodie and fitted cap that would like match their boots or whatever, or their kicks or whatever, like Jadakiss or like JR. And the Mace, one time I seen him like a Maybach on the outside. He was goofy though, he was weird. But yeah, it was definitely like a pivotal time, because those beats, the two beats that I gave them, like got way more mileage than just a single freestyle on a K Slay Alchemist mixtape and the Dipset Diplomatic Immunity 2 album. You know, Papoose then jumped on both of them, and Jim Jones jumped on the Hell Rel beat with Papoose for a different freestyle for K Slay. So Papoose's catalog then stretched it, and then it's like Style Wars with J.R. Ryder and Papoose, and then
I remember that.
There's another joint, Gangsters or something like that, with Jim Jones. which is the Hell Rel beat. So there's two of my beats went to Dipset, and yeah, I'm happy about that. You know what I mean? Like, that's like a moment, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I got my credit, I got my check. I'm cool. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not getting like, it's less than streaming numbers as far as like what I'm getting off of publishing, but like, I was happy to just get my foot in the door, so to speak, you know, and just be around heads. So yeah, it was big. That was like, Dipset were like a big thing in New York. It was them and D Block.
Yep.
Pretty much, you know, Stack Bundles, Rest in Power, like definitely was coming up around that time. Had a lot of people breaking their necks on that. That was before like Max and French, you know, it was before right. Coke Wave and all that.
Right.
So yeah, so that's a different time. Like, this is like the ringtone era. Well, like yeah, basically the ringtone era. So crazy. You know, different environment. Yeah,
different times. When you look back over the last 30 plus years of New York, do you have a favorite period or moment as both a participant as well as a fan?
Ooh, I love now a lot. I love. Mm. You know, the potentials of now. I love the mixiness of now. Like, it's not as like divisionist or segregated based on like nonsense ideas of like where people should be or who should be where doing what. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, nah, like, we're not on that time. And there's just so many ill people from, again, like different eras of living, of existence, of being a New Yorker or just being an artist or just like a person on the planet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Everyone's mixing it up. So that's very key to me, I think. Other than that, though, I'd say definitely like, yeah, like that 90s era was incredible. I loved the 80s shit was crazy too, though, like the late 80s especially. But I wasn't, yo, relax. I wasn't, my cat's bugging. I wasn't outside though at that point. You know what I mean? I was tapping in video music box, WBLS, Kiss FM, all that, WBAI and all that. But like, I couldn't, you know, I wasn't going to the shows or the clubs or whatever, you know what I mean? So it wasn't the thing until like the mid 90s. But yeah, that's like that early mid 90s, mm-hmm. like underground situation. Like Fondalum Records, like Juggernauts and Psy and Yeshua, and obviously Co-Flow. You know, yeah, there was something special about that. Radio too, mix shows was crazy. That was the Tape Kings era that I like tapped in with. You know what I mean? So that was super pivotal. And like gear was crazy back then. You know, that was like the Helly Hansen era, the Nautica era, the, you know what I mean? So like 94, 93 to about like 96. 97 was like some shit, but even you can't front on like 98, 99 either. Like, that's Doom coming out, you know what I'm saying? That's like, yeah, that's Adam's Family shit, you know what I mean? So, you know, Canox, you know, all that. It was, yeah, it was definitely a time to be around, you know what I mean? A time to be outside, so to speak.
Absolutely. You know,
yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I wish I was older. Sometimes I wish I wasn't, though. You know, sometimes, I mean, like, I'm perfectly content at the same time. You know, like, I'm like, oh, I wish I could have been outside for 88 or whatever. You know what I mean? But I'm like, it's cool. Like, you experience what you experience because, you know, like, that's what it is. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what the universe intended or whatever. So I'm like, I bet. Like, it's okay.
wish I could show my appreciation for this
podcast.
I wish I could respond to it somehow or be notified in the future when
Fly Fidelity
updates because it's so great. But I don't think there's a way I can do any of those things.
Uh-oh, you're wrong.
Subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and SoundCloud and never miss an episode. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
My peoples, are you with me where you at?